Hello and welcome to episode 123 of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And this week we have Mary Lang.
Hello.
Rhys Parton.
Oh, sorry. Good morning.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Hello.
And Robert Haynes. We would have Alicia Pearson, but Alicia Pearson's decided to be a bit lazy and go off and have a bath just as the podcast about to start.
We would have Julia Bartlett Sloan, but she's decided that she's not going to join us either. So,
and we would have Lewis Bailey, but as soon as I tried calling Lewis Bailey, he changed his status to unavailable. So there we go. That's the status thingamajig for turncoat for the 20 megabyte podcast.
Lewis Bailey.
Lewis Bailey. He's some the ha. Penis Patrol presenter.
Okay.
Oh. Yes. He's been updating his Facebook picture with him being on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Has he?
I thought you were going to be rude then, Kirby.
Huh?
Anyway, saying about the ha penis patrol, it reminds me, of course, that the charts are this week, and being that this is Sunday evening, I haven't compiled them yet, so I'll have to insert them later on. Also, the fact that, and the technical errors problems I'm going to have today, because the computer I record my audio with has been shut down and had loads of Windows updates added to it, and is currently about
Windows 7.
So my recording wave is about 5 seconds behind the track at the moment. So that means it's probably going to miss out lots of bits of my audio, which means I'll have to use my backup audio track, which isn't as good. It's a bit hissy, background noise. Condenser microphones and stuff. But it's what I used to be quiet. It's what I used to record the podcast with. Right, so enough of that small talk and ramblings. I have some audio feedback. I just hope it works because I'm playing this through my iPhone. I just hope I don't be quiet, haven't got any text messages or anything.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Human Nature and Family Blood by Paul Cornell. Harry Lloyd was a good choice to play Jeremy Burns, who was possessed by an alien. He reminded me of Jeremy Clarkson. It seemed odd that the family needed to consume a Time Lord or die within 3 months. It is necessary for the plot. House and the Doctor's wife also consume Time Lords. Arwen, daughter of Elrond in Lord of the Rings, had a vision of what her life might be like if she gave up her long life and became human to marry Aragorn. John Smith had a vision of what his life might be like if he gave up his long life to marry Joan Redfern, but that could never happen because the family blood were hunting him. As part of his farewell tour in The End of Time, the 10th Doctor visits Joan Redfern's great-granddaughter, who has written a book. Bye for now.
Bye, Ian. Thank you once again.
Thanks, Ian. Captain.
Thanks, Ian.
Yes.
That's kind of short for him.
Yeah.
Got a bit of a frog in your throat there, Kirby.
Huh?
Bit of a frog in your throat there.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. Aww. Have some more audio feedback. Yeah, from Matthew Crissell. It's sent via iPhone memo, so it should work all right because I'm playing it via an iPhone.
This is Matthew from North Alabama sending in some feedback on the Series 3 two-parter, Human Nature, Family of Blood. This two-parter is an atypical Doctor Who story in many ways. The first is that it is a full-on adaptation of a previously existing non-televised Doctor Who story. While both Dalek and the previous series' Cyberman two-parter certainly pulled ideas from the Big Finish Audio's Jubilee and Spare Parts, this is a much more faithful adaptation here. While there are definitely changes, the 7th Doctor and Bernice Summerfield become the 10th Doctor and Martha. They are set at different schools, a year apart, and Joan Redfern's background changes between the book and the TV version. The broad strokes of Paul Cornell's sadly out-of-print 1995 Virgin New Adventure, which is still available from whowon.co.uk, incidentally,
yay,
are plain to see. And an ironic piece of unintended foreshadowing, there's even a scene where Bernice Summerfield meets a character claiming to be the 10th Doctor who is looking in on his past. Go figure. It's also atypical because, like Blink, though to a lesser extent than Blink, it's the Doctor Who universe seen through the eyes of an ordinary person. While John Smith is played by David Tennant and therefore has the same face and voice as the Doctor, he is an average person from 1913, and this is something that Tennant plays brilliantly throughout, as John Smith makes the journey from average person to learning he's something far greater in a story arc that's oddly reminiscent, or should I say premonescent, of Donna's journey through the following season. It's also atypical because, as John Smith, the Doctor says and does things we would never expect him to do, such as the casual ways he both gives permission for Latimer to receive a beating and dismisses Martha's claims as simply being, quote, cultural differences. Watching this story again, I was struck by how much this story takes what seems to be a much more honest look at both classism and racism, as illustrated not just by those two aforementioned examples, but by the scene early in Human Nature where Baines and Hutchinson talk to Martha and Jenny. Even Joan herself isn't above this casual racism and classism, as seen when she tells Martha off for being too close to Smith and has a hard time believing that Martha could be a doctor in Family of Blood. This story is also atypical for another reason that, if you'll permit a comparison to another British icon with a much-anticipated 50th birthday around the corner, makes this Doctor Who's On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Though thankfully, without George Lazenby, and I'm not just making this comparison because the David Tennant audiobook of the 1963 Ian Fleming Bond novel is coming out next month.
Of course you aren't.
If you think about it, both Bond and the Doctor are characters who constantly go around saving the day from dastardly villains and do so with beautiful women by their sides that they never fall in love with. This is the story of what happens when they do fall in love, and it doesn't end well. Look beyond the genre trappings, be they action-adventure in the case of James Bond, or sci-fi in the case of Doctor Who, and there's a tragic love story to be found beneath it all. For all these reasons, this atypical Doctor Who story remains not only memorable, but one of the best offerings that televised Doctor Who has presented us with, even 5 years on. Best wishes to everyone at the 20-megabyte Doctor Who podcast from Matthew Kressel.
Oh, it's Matthew Kressel. Yay. How did I pronounce it? Thank you, Matthew.
Oh,
once again,
guy on the show. I mean, he's loaded with information.
It would be lovely
to
be able
to have
him.
We'll just turn it all over to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only we had enough room on the Skypey doodah.
Well, quite.
Yes. Now he did allude to something that made me think of something, and now I've forgotten what it was. Any comments while I try and remember? You started.
He mentions how well how close David Tennant plays both the Doctor and John Smith, and I read somewhere that he even made the choice to not go with the Scottish accent that supposedly is John Smith. That he's supposed to be from Scotland, so they had to change his place of origin. Because David Tennant wanted to play it as regular English, not Scottish, which is kind of strange.
No, I think it would have been quite interesting if he'd played it as Scottish. I think it would also have detached John Smith from the Doctor more. That's my view anyway. But before we move on to Family of Blood and Human Nature, or the other way around, even.
Start with Human Nature.
Right, I did correct myself in the last second.
Before Family Blood.
Yeah, glad everyone's so awake. We have a sponsor.
Yeah, speak.
And they're whowon.co.uk.
Who are they, Kirby?
Why is everybody talking over each other today? Just to make a change.
Tonight,
we do not speak over. We do not sleep over the sponsor.
Yeah. Anyway. We have The Girl Who Waited mini set is coming out, priced $9.99, and it looks a little bit like a character building set with the robot thing, you know, the blank facey thing.
The handbot.
That's the one. Yeah. Basically, that's the only new thing, and it's got the room with the logo on and a little mirror thing that looks like a picture of Amy in it. $9.99 looks quite novel, actually. But yeah, basically the only sort of new figure you get with that is the, as you called it, the handbot.
Handbot,
which isn't
That's
available.
His name.
I know, but that isn't available in any other, you know, format. You can't buy the little packs yet, unless they're bringing out a new range of the little hand, you know, the little sort of minifigures.
Oh, they will.
I hope they do, because I do love them. There's also another set, the Doctor in Berlin mini set, which features Rory on a motorbike and, funny enough, Amy on a motorbike.
And oh, where's the Doctor?
I wonder where they got that from.
Some Lego stuff. Well, sorry, character building type Lego things. Again, that's... it says book paperback. It says highly detailed character building. It's not highly detailed, is it? It's just a little model Lego things. It says highly detailed character building Doctor Who construction playset featuring two microfigures, Amy Pond and Rory Williams. Ironic, of course, that you still can't get...
Pond.
You still can't... Well, it says Williams on this blurb. You still can't get... All right, stop being awkward. Yeah. You still can't get Rory in the 5-inch figures yet, which I think is an absolute crime. Anyway, another set has come up.
I do too.
And it's really good. It's
refraining
called...
from making jokes.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. The TARDIS dematerialization. Sorry, dematerializing mini set, which is basically...
Yes, I'm looking at that. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah, the TARDIS made out of clear bricks, basically, with a Doctor and an Amy with it. Don't really need the Doctor and an Amy, because it's the most common characters you can get with the character buildings.
Yeah, but Adam.
Yes.
When we had some at one of our shops here, it sold out within a record time. I was looking at the price of them. I was waiting till I got paid. When I went back, the whole box was gone.
What are the?
So they sell out.
Are you talking about?
I couldn't get anything. Yeah.
The dematerializing mini set specifically.
No, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. They'd all gone.
Well, they are rather good. I mean, I've got a full set of them on the mantelpiece.
Very popular. Very, very popular.
Very popular, but very good. Very simple. Quite cheap. I think that's why they're so popular, because £1.99 per pack. You don't know what you're going to get in the pack, which is it's partly the exciting thing, apart from you can tell which the Daleks are. That's about the only thing you can say. still good. I'm looking forward to the next
one. Well, I can't tell because there's none here.
I'll tell you one really cool thing. If you go to the top page of whowon.co.uk,
it's got our logo.
We have a very nice 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast thing right at the top.
We mean our logo.
Yes.
You nicked that off on my website, you know. My phone's doing funny things. I better disconnect it from.
What website is that, Kirby?
I think it may be whowon.co.uk.
Not being funny.
What website is that?
I'm not being funny, Robert. Weren't you listening to the bit at the beginning when I said it was whowon.co.uk? I did.
I'm just typing it in right now. If I can have
Hang on a sec. You're seriously asking what website it is?
I can see what you're talking
about.
We're
always serious
now.
When we ask that question. We need to know us.
You mean you've been talking about whowon.co.uk and never looked at the website?
Where'd you get that from? I've looked at the website.
Every week we say it. How many times?
Yeah.
What do we say? You mean whowon.co.uk?
Despair.
Yeah, something like that. Something like whowon.co.uk.
I'm looking at it right now.
Anyway, apparently, moving on to news, you know, I just played that thing from the San Diego Comic Con, which had no mention of Doctor Who on it. Of course, there was plenty of Doctor Who stuff at that Comic Con, which has since popped up. But it's just a bit of a shame. Also, Matt Smith is appearing in Bert and Dickie, which is a little drama about the 1948 Olympic rowing team. And that's going to be on Wednesday, the 25th of July, which is incidentally the same day that the Queen is visiting cows, or specifically meeting Alicia. Because as I've said before, it's not the other way around. She is not meeting the Queen. The Queen is meeting Alicia.
Absolutely.
The world revolves around her.
And whether she comes out of it at the other end unscathed remains to be seen. The Queen, obviously,
the Queen, yeah.
I'm sure Alicia will be unscathed.
Poor woman.
So that I'm looking forward to that, actually, because obviously I quite enjoyed his performance in that other thing he was in last year, BBC drama.
Christopher and his
That's the one! Thank you for inserting the name of the programme that I've forgotten.
And I'm sure we will eventually get Bert and Dickie over here on PBS Masterpiece Theatre.
Yes.
It'll probably be 6 to 8 months.
You reckon?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. there's a docudrama on the way. The 50th anniversary of Doctor Who approaches. The first indication of a special programme to celebrate the milestone has surfaced with a recent advertisement by BBC Careers for a new producer, stating that a passion for drama and a knowledge of Doctor Who is essential. Obviously, they didn't particularly have that title for when they advertised the job for Stephen Moffat. But nevertheless, applicant should probably have knowledge of period drama. Again, Stephen Moffat, and they need not apply. The role is for a single drama on BBC Two, with the producer based at the new Roth Lock Studios in Cardiff Bay for a 5-month term.
They've already made the Pitch of Fear.
Have they? Anyway, the full detail.
Have you seen the Pitch of Fear?
I think
YouTube and watch the Pitch of Fear.
Is it not on the DVD?
It's on
extras?
The very first. It's on the Unearthly Child DVD
yes,
as well.
Yes, I thought it was.
It's hilarious.
Full details of the position are included in some advert somewhere. But basically, apparently it says something to do with the docudrama on the birth of Doctor Who. What else have we got? Doctor Who Experience opens in Porthtigar, which is part Tiger Bay, I do believe. They saw the official opening, this is Friday the 20th of July, by the way, of the Doctor Who Experience to the public.
And why weren't you there at first in line?
I think you know the answer to that question. I don't really need to sort of elaborate on that one. a special ceremony marked the event with a young visitor dressed as the 11th Doctor, complete with fez. Only one person dressed as the Doctor? How unusual. Yeah, given the honour of cutting the ribbon to open the experience, and a Dalek and Cyberman and a notification from Facebook were there.
I wonder who that was.
Wow.
I wonder who that is. Robert Haynes.
The notification just hovering here.
Robert Haynes commented on your post. Ready, I'm not.
What did I say?
Right, let's put that on silent. Right. Moving on, the future of Television Centre has just been decided. BBC Television Centre in London will remain a key broadcasting centre under a deal signed by the corporation today. Actually, episode 2 is a massive building. What's the point in closing it down? I mean, the studio facilities there are second to none. It's a bit like closing down like Elstree or something like that. You can't do a thing like that. Well, it could, but it'd be stupid. Colin Labours, the man behind the Fifth Doctor's costume, Colin Labours, has passed away. Seems to be having a lot of these little Doctor Who legends passing away recently. But I suppose the further we get away from the classic era, you're going to get more people passing away, unfortunately. Matt Swift has ruled himself out of appearing in a big screen version of the show. Speaking to Collider at last week's Comic Con, he explained, "For my money, whoever is playing the Doctor should be in the movie." Obviously, that means
perfect impression.
Thank you. I don't think I could do it sort of in Patrick Troughton sort of.
I don't think there should be two Doctors.
I'm not going to try that, sorry. I think that it would take 4 or 5 years to get something that like that off the ground, and I don't anticipate that I'll be playing the Doctor then. I'm doing it in William Shatner at the moment. My skin and the ageing process couldn't take it, but I don't see any reason why it couldn't work. I think they could get Stephen to write it because he's the best. Oh! I'm sure Ben might disagree with that particular statement. That concludes news for this week. So that rather leaves us with a story to talk about.
Oh, wait a minute. Another piece of news, I guess only for Americans, but I think it was on the same site you were looking at, that BBC Worldwide was reporting that the most popular show on BBC America this last year was Doctor Who Season 6.
Excellent.
Yes.
And I should hope so too.
Excellent.
And something that maybe Reese would be interested in knowing is that after premiering the Doctor Who Spectacular, the orchestral show, that it received such wonderful reception where Reese saw it, that they're now planning on touring it in America. They don't say where. Yeah, they're going to tour it in America and other places next year. Yeah.
I missed that. I didn't see that any place. That's cool. It'll never come where I am, though.
Mm. However, did you see the what I play, the actual video of what I played last week on the show, the season, sorry, series, I'll edit that bit out, the series 7.
Excuse me, Adam.
Yes. Sorry, I've been contaminated by Reese. The Series 7...
You've been blessed. Educated.
That's definitely contaminated. Anyway, the question was, did you get to see it? Series 7 teaser trailer, I think.
I did.
Good.
I saw it ages ago.
Yes, I saw it.
Thank you, Adam.
I saw it ages ago. It's not a blimmin' competition. I'll just ask if you've seen it, for goodness sake.
Yes, right. I have. Good. I saw it ages ago.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same one they've been showing.
Yeah.
So I went to all the trouble of including that in the show last week, and I was the last one to... Yes?
Yeah.
I looked at your link. Thank you very much.
You watched my link?
You looked at his
I
link.
I used your link.
Did you say lick?
I used your link.
Hang on, did you say...
Link.
It sounded like I said lick.
I'm worried about what you should get up to when we're not recording.
Wake up, Robert.
God, I'm so glad Alicia's not on a moment, then I won't have to remind her what innuendo is. Right. Human nature, a family of blood.
Okay, never mind.
Go on then, Curly.
Before.
Did anyone bother clicking on my little joke yesterday?
I'm glad you put the word joke
the
then. I'm glad you inserted the word joke at the end of that statement, because I was starting to get a little bit worried what you were going to say.
Where I meowbified the Doctor Who...
Yes. Bated breath. The Doctor Who.
Drum roll.
I ran bbc.co.uk/Doctor Who through a particular joke site that turns everything into cats.
What?
For Catter Day.
Well, you know, when I went to that and I was clicking on them, I thought I was going to see cats doing the different things. But the cats are just in the initial picture.
Yes.
Once you click on it, it turns into the real story.
Exactly.
Okay.
Can I ask the question now?
Why?
I thought you asked me a question to do with it. Weren't you?
And Kirby.
Yeah.
It wasn't yesterday. It was the day before yesterday for me. Thank you.
It was.
You people from the future, you.
From our members in the future, yes.
We come from the future.
Anyway, moving on to Doctor Who. Human nature.
Tell me, from the future, do we have personal jetpacks yet?
Not that far in the future.
I saw somebody on the telly with a jetpack the other day, but they only last 30 seconds.
I saw that.
Anyway, right.
My son still wants one. Adam.
Yes.
Are you watching this with the episode on?
I'm trying to, yes. Yes, but having to keep stopping doesn't help.
No. I was going to tell you something.
Oh, yes.
Keep an eye out for the kids when they're marching towards the school. There's a kid right at the back in the middle.
It's not you, is it?
And he can't march to save his life, honestly. You know how you march with your opposite limbs?
Yeah.
Like your right leg with your left arm.
When you say opposite limbs, you mean he's marching with his hands?
Oh, goodness me.
I missed that.
No, he's marching on his legs,
right.
But he's moving his right leg with his right arm and his left leg with his right arm.
Right arm out. In, out, in, out, shake it all about. You do the okey cokey and you turn around. And that's where it's all about. Oi! Let's get on with Doctor Who, please.
What did you call it? Here's the hokey pokey.
What? The hokey pokey?
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, we
same here.
The hokey pokey.
Hokey cokey. Anyway, Doctor Who, human nature, starts with the Doctor having just been on a unseen adventure with Martha, because he flies into the TARDIS and says that obviously the family of blood are after him and basically want him, so that he's got to stop being a Time Lord, because they want a Time Lord so they can live longer than the 3 months or so what they're supposed to live. So he realises very quickly that he's got to stop being a Time Lord, and very handily TARDISes are sort of included with a sort of what they call chameleon arch,
yes, yeah.
Which enables them very painfully to change every cell of their bodies from Time Lord to, in this case, human. Very convenient.
There's no spittle this week, though.
His pardon?
No spittle this week.
No
though.
Spittle this week.
No spillage.
Yeah.
But anyway, right. Very quickly, suddenly he wakes up in a bed. We think it's a doctor initially, but some chap in a set of pyjamas. But as soon as Martha walks in dressed as a maid and he talks very posh, we realise that he's not quite the doctor. Now, I still think that if he had been a teacher called John Smith with a Scottish accent, it might have made it even clearer that he wasn't the doctor. However,
yes, I would have liked.
No,
doesn't matter.
The Scottish accent.
Are those pajamas his same Christmas Invasion pajamas?
I hope not, because that would be silly. But they could be though, because if he told Martha in one of his instructions to change him into, although then Martha would have seen him in his anyway, into the pajamas.
Ooh. Well.
Well, you know.
Is that a rite of passage now for all companions?
But I have to say,
change the doctor into pajamas.
No, I don't know. I have to say, now you said about the pajamas, the dressing gown looks quite familiar as well. But then it would have to be.
How very Arthur Dent of him.
Period, wouldn't it?
Yes. Arthur Dent never got changed, did he?
It's,
He only had the one pair of underwear, too.
Yeah, so Martha then hands him a newspaper that indicates, because he said he's had a dream. He had a dream about that he was called the Doctor, etc., etc. They're in 1913. Yes, am I? Is everybody keeping up with this?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so pleased. And of course, then we have to put up with the title.
By
the
way, it's
written by Paul Cornell. Directed by Charles
Palmer.
Can I
tell you something about Paul Cornell?
He's got funny teeth.
No, yeah, I know. I couldn't help but look at the teeth. But I was saying to my son he needs dental work. But I've got a friend in.
What's wrong with your son's
Cornwall.
Teeth?
No, I've got a friend. No. I've got a friend in Cornwall.
Oh, no. I've just unplugged my table. Cool. Right, well, let's plug it back in again.
How did you see Paul Cornell that you know his teacher so bad?
He's on the DVDs, the extras.
Oh, okay.
Say they're
okay.
Bad, they're just a bit overcrowded in his mouth, I'd say.
And they're a bit grey too, honestly.
Well, okay.
It looked like
maybe he smokes a lot.
It looks like
I couldn't find him on this particular disc. He must be on a different disc.
I would imagine he smokes a lot.
Yeah. No, he's on the Confidentials.
Yes, he is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Moving back to
but
Doctor
can I say,
Who.
What was I, can I say what I was going
to
say?
Yes, of course you can. It's got to do with Doctor Who, hasn't it?
Oh, listen to that voice tone. It sounds like Alicia.
What does?
Can I say what I want to say?
How dare you?
It's about Paul Cornell.
Paul Cornell?
Go for it, Robert.
Yeah, go on then, Robert. Let's please.
I've got a friend.
Please spit it out.
I've got a friend in Cornwall. Goodness me. I've got a friend in Cornwall.
Have you?
Okay, yeah.
I've got him.
He's an acquaintance of his knows Paul Cornell.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I may ask in the future if...
Why he's got funny teeth.
See. I could do that.
I know the answer to that, but I'm not going to say it.
Oh, go on then, Reese. Why has he got funny teeth?
No. I'm not going to say it.
Okay, well, back to Doctor Who.
Is it something about the UK, is it?
No, it's not. Anyway, right.
Probably.
No, I'm just sorry. We need to...
quality of water.
Please, let's get back to the story. So it's a two-part of, for God's sake. Anyway, meanwhile, Martha and what's the other girl called before she changes into one?
Jenny,
yeah. They're cleaning the floor, Jenny. And there's a bit of a racist remark that passes by. But
she doesn't look like the doctor's daughter.
What? Oh, very funny. Anyway, you notice instantly about Baines that he has a rather strange shaped face. He sort of talks as if he's got like a Picasso face, and his mouth seems to be on the side of his head. He sort of talks.
He looks okay in what's name though?
On the what's
he
the name?
He looks normal when you see him on the Confidential.
Yeah, he doesn't normal. He doesn't go crooked until he's taken over by the family
of
blood.
No, I will dispute this, because just a minute ago he wasn't taken over by the family of blood, and he still had a very wonky face. Obviously, it's even wonkier when he's taken over by the family of blood. You are going to be talking over yourself a lot, or each or yourselves quite a lot this week, aren't you? I just have a feeling that you're just going to... And again.
What's that?
Anyway, the doctor, sorry.
Do you realize that the actor is the great-great-great-grandson of Charles Dickens?
No, I didn't realize that at all, no. It has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on this particular story.
Yes, it does, because Charles Dickens is one of those real characters who's appeared in Doctor Who.
But not this one.
And do you know something else? Do you want to know something else? The director, Charles Palmer, is the son of Jeffrey Palmer, isn't he?
Thank you. Anyway, Jeffrey Palmer's in that
drama. The actor who plays Latimer, the little kid,
the little boy,
provides the voice of Ferb Fletcher in Phineas and Ferb.
Thank you. Anyway, back to Doctor
What's
Who.
That?
You don't know
it's
what Phineas and Ferb is?
It's a cartoon.
Yeah, no. Yeah, never mind. Back to
very popular.
Back to Doctor Who.
Tumbleweed.
The doctor, sorry, John Smith meets up with Nurse.
Red Fern.
Joan,
whatever her name is. And she Red basically. For God's sake.
Because the doctor.
Ow! Ow! Ow!
Robert, stop that!
What?
What?
Oh,
what?
Good
grief!
Oh,
wow.
This sounds terrible. I think we should
Adam,
put on
are you
video.
All right? Oh, my gosh. By the way, Reese, you're putting out more podcasts.
Yes,
I
what's
am.
Going on?
Finding time
I
to record
to
and
catch
edit
up listening.
Oh, ooh, excellent.
Well, and I was going to say, Reese, that I think your decision to go with shorter time frames helps a lot.
I think it actually helps me edit it in time and release it. Yeah, we talk for quite a while, don't we, Robert?
Yes.
Did I hear you say that Robert's on your next podcast?
No, I haven't been on.
No?
Well,
I've been able to keep up with recent podcasts lately, releasing so many. I mean, I've still got a few on the iPod to listen to.
Right.
Last one I listened to was the Avengers one. Oh, so Family
of
Blood.
How much of,
I know what I was going to say.
My notes are kind of, you know, jumping all over the place, so I can't give a good synopsis.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the thing open.
The, oh, wow.
The thing, huh?
Page. Like, wow. I'll rephrase that. No, I've got the Wikipedia page open.
Put that thing away.
Who invented that word, Wikipedia? No, I was going to say, you know when Joan and John Smith meet up, I should say, on that up the top of the stairs. I was just going to say that wasn't John Smith a bit nasty giving all those books for Joan to hold instead of just allowing her to pick up the book and put it on top of his pile? I just thought, he just handed all over the books and, it would have been easy if she did just pick it up.
I got the impression that he was preoccupied because he was infatuated with her.
All right.
Right there at the beginning, you got that feeling he was infatuated?
Look at him. Watch. I'm playing the whole thing and he's so, interested
Mine
in
ran
talking
out
with her.
That.
He's so interested in talking with her that he's not paying attention. He's just barely aware of the books.
Oh, okay.
Did you see the marching bit, Kirby?
Oh, yeah. I saw that this time. Yeah. I hadn't seen that before, though.
Yeah. No, I just saw it at the back of Doctor Who magazine.
Every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'll never be able to watch it without seeing that. Dang.
And actually, you mentioned at the moment at the top of the stairs, But just after we fell down, Adam started going, ow, ow, ow.
Yeah.
And you know, another thing, between Reese mentioning, what's his name, David Tennant's eyebrows, and Adam mentioned sideburns, I'm distracted by them two things now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness me.
Well, speaking of that, look at Reese's eyebrows in his picture.
Oh, no, I'm going to have nightmares when I get to bed.
Nightmares of eyebrows.
The haunting of the eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
So, what happened from then on? It is 1913. And the war has come a year in advance as the terrifying family hunts for the doctor. Doctor!
Yes, doctor!
It's a lot better.
Doctor. Yes. Why do they always have to say it that way? Doctor.
Yeah.
Because it sounds evil.
Dory says, doctor!
Well, what I found interesting is that Joan is... as played by Jessica Hines, I didn't know this, but apparently she's a very popular comedic actress in England. And to see her play, this fragile, sweet, you know, retiring person, I would never guess she was but she's known for being comedic actress.
No.
Oh, she was in Shaun of the Dead. I still need to watch that.
Oh.
Oh, really?
I'll have to watch that. I've got that on, no, I haven't. I've watched it.
She was, a minor part, Yvonne. But again, I haven't seen it, so
I'd probably know it if I watched it again. Yeah. It's quite funny. I mean, not
quite. She created some sitcom called Spaced.
Ah.
Yeah, I read where she had a weekly comedy program.
Oh, with Simon Pegg. Oh, cool.
Yes, precisely, that's what I'm saying.
I think there must be only like two dozen British actors, and they all do
everything. Everything.
It's the same here in Australia, too.
Yes, precisely, yeah. A lot feature Craig McLaughlin, don't they, Reese?
Yes.
Things like that.
That's probably just gone over the Americans' heads.
Yeah.
Yes, it has.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to know something, Reese? I was in a movie with Craig McLaughlin.
You were?
You were in a movie?
Yeah.
You were in a movie?
Yeah. Only as an extra, okay?
Where's your internet movie database entry?
Blink and you'd miss it.
What?
Don't blink.
Hey, that's on next week, which is, on next week? What am I talking about?
On whenever you want to put it in the DVD player.
Precisely. I've been talking about it this week. Well,
when
I don't know.
When I lived in New York, I was extra in King Kong.
Oh, excellent.
One of the, you know, hundreds of thousands, you know, gathered while he climbs the tower.
We'll have to look out for you.
Which King Kong?
The one with Jessica.
The more recent one?
Oh,
yeah. No. There's three.
Are you saying I was in the black and white King Kong?
No,
that's what I was thinking.
No. There was a 70s version and a one a few years ago.
Oh, the 70s version.
Okay, so you were gathered around the World Trade Center.
It's Jessica.
Yes,
Lang.
That's where you were.
Jessica Lang.
Okay.
Jessica Lang. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any relation?
Dino De Laurentiis.
Any relation, Jessica Lange? Hello?
To Jessica Hunt.
Okay.
I'm not allowed to say much, so I'm just trying to listen. Hello?
Well, we're trying to carry on, but no one really has the synopsis.
No.
No, I've got the plot here, but...
The plot.
So we've been making random comments.
Lucky for you.
You're making,
I lost the plot.
Making random comments... As usual.
Yes, yeah.
So unlike us.
No, I was just wondering when you said Jessica Lange, if that was any relation.
Oh, to me? No.
Dear.
But Mary was in a film with her.
No, no, I heard that, but I've been listening for the last 5 minutes.
Oh, you have been. Honest, did you?
Hoping you might get to start talking about the story that I've been did initially.
Oh, we did, but then we wandered off again.
Yeah, we did. We did a little bit.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
I think I might have to be a little bit briefer than originally planned on this one.
Yeah, we gathered that.
Basically, I wanted to just go over a couple of things. Namely, that why did schoolmasters have to wear those sort of flat hat things in those days?
Tradition.
Yeah.
I looked it up. It was tradition.
Why? What use could they have possibly served?
It showed it. It was a.
Wouldn't it show your rank?
Yeah, in that society, everyone had a role, and that showed where you were in.
Is status.
Yeah, it's the same reason why in Family of Blood that Joan actually takes time to change out of her fancy dress into the new nurse's uniform before they get ready to repel the scarecrows.
Mm.
And I think the world of academe, I think that where the tassel sits on the hat also says what degree the person holds. What stole they're wearing with their black thing also tells you what their degrees are.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yes.
Anyway.
Personally, for me, now, I think, anyway.
When the doctor, going back a little bit now, because obviously we have moved on a bit, I just wanted to say a few things about certain things early on in the story. When the doctor, obviously he's fallen down the stairs, because John Smith, he falls down the stairs backwards.
Yeah, when he's talking with them.
Yeah, because he's had a stack of books and gets a bit flustered.
You supplied the sound effects for that.
Yeah, gets a bit flustered because she hints that she wants him to take her to the annual dance.
Hang on,
thing's gone funny here. What's it doing? Right.
Go ahead, and then I've got a comment about the dance.
No, it's just that there's certain details in the room, the set, sorry. God, I'm trying to find the bit on it, because it's been really...
Yeah, his office is definitely a set, by the way.
It's details in it watching it, you know, a few times, because this is one of the Doctor Who stories that you can watch, you know, on its own. It's very well detached from the rest of the series. It's probably the best standalone episode, because there's no mention of the story arc in it. There's no
How come then Moffat hasn't taken more notice of these episodes?
I don't quite know what you mean.
Well, you know how he copies everything.
And he likes
how come he hasn't paid attention to... Yeah, how come he hasn't paid attention to these standalone sort of things?
Well, I think that's what this next series is supposed to be, right?
He's already said that there is going to be a bit of a story arc anyway.
Mm.
He said it last week at Comic-Con.
But anyway...
Disappointing.
In the room. I love the bit where Martha comes in and she runs in and she says, "Oh, don't you knock." She runs back.
I know.
To the
yeah, can you
in.
Knock,
yeah.
please?
Yeah. I do like that.
She was brilliant in this story.
Oh, she was excellent. But there's a grandfather cop who looks, well, reminded me of the Master's TARDIS a tad bit. The Keeper of Track.
Ooh.
Only a little bit. What else do we have in there? That was little attentions to detail. I'm just gonna.
Can I ask everybody something?
No.
Okay. I was gonna ask about the scarecrows. Were they all activated from various fields by the family?
I've absolutely no idea. Anybody?
Because I've wondered then.
Did they exist in the field and then they were animated?
Yes.
I don't think so. No, I think they were created in the...
I was just wondering because, you know, they seem to be lying in the... Well, not lying, standing in the fields.
Mr. Clark, father of mine, before he became father of mine, was startled that there was a scarecrow even there. in his own field, because he said, this is my field.
Yeah, but that's because he... Okay.
Well, I didn't get the feeling he was startled. I thought he was upset that someone was playing with his scarecrow.
Yeah.
Well, he moved his arm anyway, when he saw it. It moved its arm, so that's why he went over to him, put his arm through there.
Did you see the deleted scene when Sister of Mine was being followed?
No.
Yeah, she was skipping down the road with a balloon, and we saw that part, and we saw where a scarecrow grabs her in the actual show.
Was that Jenny?
No.
The little girl with the balloon.
No, she's mother. The little girl. Okay. No, because I just wondered, because I'm sure she called her daughter mine.
No, anyway, she's sister of mine. Anyway, the longer sequence, she's skipping down the lane, and it's raining like crazy. It's almost
everywhere. It's raining all the time then.
Yeah, this whole episode.
But she's skipping down the lane, and she walks, she goes by the field, and there's one of the scarecrows, and it does this little hand wave at her, and it doesn't bother her.
Oh.
And she calls it silly.
Huh.
And then it starts following her. And only when a second one approaches does she scream and get scrapped. But something else
when they show that little girl is they play that sort of music like they did in Remembrance of the Daleks as well.
Yes.
Yeah, sort of child.
For this episode, they had Murray Gold as one of the people on the commentary, but he didn't have much to contribute, which was disappointing.
Yeah, I always find that. You think somebody could contribute to the episode really well, and then they don't say much. A bit disappointing.
Yeah, he had a couple of things to say about the waltz music, it's a dance, and a little bit about the motifs, and that was pretty much it. Most of the commentary was Paul Cornell, and that's just for this episode. For Family of Blood, they had different people.
Mm-hmm.
And that always bothers me. For a two-parter, I'd like them to keep the same people.
Yes.
Anyway, back to the attention to detail in that particular set was his master's voice gramophone. That was the other thing I sort of noticed in that room, which was really good.
I
was just wondering, now, when she came to the journal, how many of you actually paused the freeze framed it so she could read the pages?
Oh, every page.
I've got it frozen right now with the Eighth Doctor right in the middle of the screen too.
Because I've got a copy of the thing, so I don't need to.
Hang on, Alicia is now disentangling my very precious iPhone headphones from a cable, very roughly. They're about £30 worth of earphones, and she just yanked them because they fell off the plate during something that happened earlier on this evening. I'll hang them on a little hook next to a plate, and during that episode they fell off.
There's a silent in the room, so nothing happened earlier this evening.
Yes.
No, what you may or may not have heard was this typical of things I have to put up with, really. But anyway.
I've experienced that before, Adam. So
that sort of
all the things that I read in that diary, the one thing that really caught me that I even wrote down is he writes, "This is my magic box. Nothing can harm me here, unless I get lost inside it."
I couldn't really read the handwriting; it was very scrawly. That's all I could say. I was trying to read it, but. It's really, really difficult to actually write. It's all the mocks of Balhoon and some Autons.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's funny that it's only mainly things that he'd seen,
I know, recently.
Apart from the sort of rough sketches of...
That's because there's a whole generation watching this that wouldn't have seen any of the other stuff. And they'd probably get excited saying...
Yeah.
The page in which there's pictures of him, which has got like strange little lines drawn through it, to the right of the McGann Eighth Doctor is a very... I think it's supposed to be the Ninth. It doesn't look like any of them.
Well, there's Sylvester McCoy to the left, yes. And there's Doctor in the middle, come again. Yeah. Who's on the right? Is that supposed to be William Hartnell?
I don't know.
And then there's
I'm waiting for it to change.
Because obviously...
And I'm looking at the picture on Human Nature on Wikipedia.
No, right.
It's got a nice still. You can, it's got a nice still of the picture.
You can, of course, buy this particular thing.
I've got a copy.
From whowon.co.uk. I believe.
Ah, yes.
Also, Nurse, Nurse Redfern has also a fob watch hanging from her lapel. I wonder if she opened it up, whether she turned into a Time Lord.
Probably.
But anyway, like you say, Martha is...
This is the first time we saw the old Doctor's faces in New Who.
Yes, it was, yes. That's right. And it was a big revelation at the time, and one of the
this specifically established the Eighth Doctor as the Eighth Doctor.
Yeah,
and in also canon.
One of the things that highlighted this as one of the fans' favourites, apart from the fact it's rather superb. Now, we have some other. Obviously, this is, we're coming up to the bit when I'm talking about the book, the journal, because the next bit after that is where we're in the dormitory and. The boy Latimer, is it Latimer?
Mm-hmm. Latimer is the young boy.
He's starting to sort
Tim,
of...
He's
obviously got the watch because he's starting to see things, Time Lordy things. And meanwhile, Bane's decided he's going to go out and get some booze. And he's still got a bit of a wonky face, to be honest with you, when he goes out to get his booze.
He's got a bit of a wonky voice, too. Very posh and very uptight.
Martha and Jenny... Martha and Jenny have struck... Yes?
You know what was funny? You know when he's doing that miming scene with the spaceship? When they show you on the Confidential, when he's... because it's raining so much, he's wearing that little plastic thing over his hair and with his coat. So it just looks funny.
Yes.
If you watch The Confidential, yeah.
Yes. Anyway, but
I still haven't watched The Confidential.
Martha and Jenny have.
Well, I'm
neither
sorry,
have I.
Martha. Oh, speaking of Harold Lloyd, son of mine, I need to bring this up.
Harry Lloyd.
For, huh? I said,
you said
Harry
Harold
Lloyd.
You said, Harold Lloyd. Comedian?
Silent film.
Wasn't he a comedian? Yeah.
Yes. I said Harry.
Never mind.
No, you said Harold.
Put that back. Ah, there you go.
Anyway.
Hold 30 seconds of my life I'll never get back. Go on.
Friend of the show, Mr. M, has mentioned that he went to the same school as Harry Lloyd. Although they were 6 or 7 years apart.
Cool. Ooh. Anyway, Martha and Jenny have struck... Martha and Jenny have struck up a sort of a friendship, which is quite nice, and they're sort of having a little tete-a-tete, and a green...
Outside.
Yeah, I know. A green thing sort of flies through the sky, and reminds me a little bit of that bit with Mr. Bean, where the light shines down from above and suddenly Mr. Bean appears.
Yeah. Oh, that's totally ruined this episode.
Yeah.
Someone's got to make a gif of that, him just falling from the sky.
And they seem to know what field it's in. Meanwhile, Baines is out there. His face is wonky. When he sees the light, he looks up and he's got a really wonky face anyway.
Actually, leave him alone.
That's it. And then he sort of walks.
Yeah, got him.
He walks into the ship. That's quite a good little effect.
Well, if you want to see it with a normal face, watch him in Robin Hood or Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he's clearly got some problem where maybe he had a sort of mini stroke before doing this episode because it's all wonky.
Now, inside the ship.
Hey?
Go ahead.
No, I didn't say anything.
No, I was going to say. No, I did.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say. In The Confidential, though, he does look a bit drunk, so I'm wondering if he's...
Yeah, he found the alcohol. Before.
Yeah.
Now, inside the ship, which, by the way, I started watching Claws of Axos the other night, and boy, the interiors of the ship do resemble each other.
Mm.
But this particular set, that water in the at the bottom of the set inside the Family Blood's ship, that's the water pool inside the hub, the Torchwood hub. This whole thing is built inside the Torchwood hub.
Cool. Excellent.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Anyway, that's the last time we see Baines as himself, because he asks him some strange questions of family blood, and then he gets taken over in a sort of big screamy sort of
Please,
way.
Can I go?
Yeah. But he does come back. But does he come back with the alcohol? Or he comes with the, even...
No, he forgets it.
No.
Even wonkier face. and looking extra... I tell you what you can say about Harry Lloyd. He can't half do a sinister look. So, Martha goes back to the TARDIS. And...
Meanwhile, back in the TARDIS.
Probably not the best idea if he's being chased by the family of blood. And she knows that a spaceship has landed. But she decides that that's a good point to go back to the TARDIS. And then she finds a video player on it and has a flashback to... We actually see what's going on with the watch now, don't we, in this particular point.
Now, have you seen the little clip? It's an extra on the DVD, but I believe Reese posted it to the Facebook page.
Yes.
Of the whole bit.
That's and,
oh, yes. What David Tennant does, right? Yeah.
Mm. No, I haven't.
I'll check the Facebook group. I posted it on there yesterday.
What's this, the uncut version or what?
Yes, the uncut version of what the doctor puts on that videotape for Martha.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool.
And David Tennant improvises a few things, and it's very funny.
Yes, it is.
All right, okay. So, yeah, but basically we see the doctor, you know, change himself to human, and then these are a list of messages on a 4x3 screen, interestingly, where this is widescreen, for the doctor. Notice also there's some post-it notes on the screen of various Time Lord logos and stuff. I don't know what they're for.
Oh,
they mention in one of the commentaries that the whole business of the Gallifreyan writing is based on pocket watch innards.
Oh, cool. Anyway.
Well, it looks like that, yes.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Mm.
And she basically...
That's the technical term. That's the technical term, innards.
Innards?
I don't know, really. She only really watches
it. Spleen.
Thank you.
As opposed to that nasty, sloppy stuff I pull out of a chicken, right?
Lovely. She only really... is looking at this so we can see what's actually happened. She already knows what's happened, and she's read them or listened to the messages over and over again and can't actually get anything out
That's
of it.
That's perfect for the companion.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. Now, at this point, earlier on we've seen Latimer sort of display sort of bits of being able to read or see the future as if he's got the watch, and then the watch is back with the doctor, which is a bit weird. I think. Is that what happens? What, the doctor picks it up and looks at it and puts it down again?
No. Earlier on, he sort of glances at the watch when it's lying in his, trying to draw kind of thing.
Oh, where he does have
a perception filter on there.
Tim Latimer has a bit of psychic powers anyway.
Oh, I see. Well, before he opens the watch up.
It's true.
Because he demonstrated them back before Son of Mine went out to get the beer in the first place.
No, I didn't realize that.
Because he sensed where his father, Jeremy Vane's father was going to be sent as far as the army. And that's why he almost got beat up.
Okay.
Yeah, it says in Wikipedia, it says, Timothy Latimer, young student at the school with extrasensory perception, discovers the fob watch and pockets it for himself.
So meanwhile, he looks in the watch and sees lots of Time Lordy things, but for some reason, him opening up the watch makes Wonky Face, his nostrils flare a little bit.
And he sniffs, doesn't he?
We've got Eyebrow Lady and Wonky Face.
Yeah, but that's how Leela would call him, Wonky Face.
Yeah. I love one scene where there's a scene with three of the Family of Blood, and eventually all four of them, the watch gets opened up, and they all sniff at the same time and stick their heads to one side.
Effective. But the,
that
so
one's ready to kill.
The scarecrows do that as well. And this is, of course, where we see the scarecrows and when the first of the Family of Blood take over the father of mine, then the daughter of mine, a little girl wandering along on a convenient balloon. Don't know where they got the helium from, but nevertheless, it was...
Do you know something about the balloon?
Oh, I might have had hydrogen
in the book.
Actually. Not helium.
It says, in the book, the balloon is the semi-sentient being aphasia... can send to attack people. And do you know aphasia is when you can't remember words or something, you can't understand words.
Okay. So obviously that another bit, which obviously the Doctor himself is against guns, but yet showing he's not the Doctor, he's actually John Smith. They're doing their gun practice, and this at this point we see the flash forward at this stage of the war, where Latimer doesn't look any older, yet he's there fighting in the trenches.
But it's only a year later, though, isn't it?
Wow. Never mind. It was, yeah, okay, fair enough. I'll give him that. He could also have lied on his, because a lot of them did in the First World War, didn't they? Lied about their ages so they could go and fight. Mm. And they,
well, Paris's brothers did.
All right.
Or one of his brothers did. Did you know that?
I do now. So anyway, John Smith and Nurse Redfern go a little stroll, and then we get to see a bit of Fifth Doctorness, where he's
Fifth Doctor,
where he throws a cricket ball in a convenient place.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was a really good scene. That very well planned out,
choreographed.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
Yes,
Reece, you don't go to drama school by any chance, do you? Anyway.
Well, as a matter of fact, I do.
There we go.
So, has drama school got to do with that, though?
Well, that's the sort of thing they teach you at drama school, about choreography and stuff. So, yes.
About that scene where he throws the cricket ball.
Yeah.
Somebody edited a shot or a bit from Doomsday where Rose is saying, "This is the day that I died." And they cut to the piano falling and implying it fell on her.
Excellent. Some people,
and it completely ruined Doomsday for me.
Some people have far too much time on their hands. Anyway, so...
Yes.
They go and see...
This is the day that I died. Clang!
They go up and see a scarecrow, and they very kindly put the scarecrow, because it's a bit wonky, back as it should look. Then the Doctor... Sorry, John Smith... draws a lovely painting of...
I keep doing that too.
Sorry, a sketch of North Nurse Redfern. A little kissy-kissy occurs. Martha doesn't see this, but she... Oh, she did see it, didn't she? That's right. She does. She walks in on...
Vulcanized toy
and
balloon
that's when she runs
first
off,
manufactured in 1847.
And she does display a severe amount of jealousy, more so than Rose ever did.
I think you've actually missed one of my favourite scenes.
Which
I think
is,
you kind of brushed over it, but
go
it
on then.
Well, Martha in the TARDIS... which she saw the video from the Doctor, but I just think Freema Agyeman did an incredible job with her body language and her facial expressions.
She did for the whole story.
Loss.
Yeah, but she did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But she goes back
she
to the time.
She was magnificent.
Can I ask something? Mm. Did they just assume, because she's got three ear piercings, which are missing from the episode, obviously, did they sort of question, I mean, was it at that time people had three ears piercings kind of thing?
3 ears?
3 ears?
No.
Well, I suppose if you've got 3 ears, and then we've got
pierced three times.
Oh, I see.
She had her ears pierced three times, which is pretty noticeable when you watch the episode.
Right.
So that's pretty un-period-like, isn't it?
Oh, I suppose it is. I hadn't really considered that, to be honest with you, but especially I hadn't really...
Would they just consider that part of... her culture.
Yeah, it could have done.
could have been, yeah.
But they couldn't mention it, obviously, because it would be considered to be non-PC. But it would explain it away. Oh, let's see, the things I have to put up with. moving on. So you were saying that, basically, because she does go back to the TARDIS and have another look through the video.
Wait a second. While I was looking up the history of toy balloons, did anyone mention the John Smith's parents?
Oh, no,
I was going to mention it if you didn't, yeah.
Yeah, this is a bit...
No, I was going to mention it,
that
too.
Was around that time that they were on their little walk, and he said about Verity and...
Sydney.
Sydney, obviously alluding to Verity Lambert and Sydney Newman. A lovely touch and very exciting.
It apparently was in the book, and it was requested that be moved on and referred to again in the...
Yeah,
in the show.
Well, Sydney knew that was perfect.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It was Sydney. Was it very human? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was credited.
Yeah. Later on in the. Anyway. Yeah. So anyway, at least we mentioned that because I nearly forgot. Yes.
That's what we're here for.
Thank you. So obviously the family of blood now comprises the little girl with the everlasting helium and the farmer bloke and the wonky face bloke.
Well, yeah, the balloon is actually the balloon is actually part of her.
Oh, it is.
The whole, isn't it?
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an attack balloon.
Fair enough. And
yeah, it's definitely an attack balloon.
You did mention that earlier. Of course, they're one short now, and that obviously means that Jenny's just about to be taken over. After, of course, sinisterly being explained what's going on by, well, they just get on and take her over, because they didn't do that the other ones. The other ones just got taken over, but they decided they'll take her in there, pointlessly.
Yeah, but we've invested more time in Jenny, haven't we?
Yeah, well, never mind. Mm-hmm. Some green smoke attacks her and takes her over.
I love the laser effects as well, the green laser effects.
Lots of green. Very, very prominent colour in this particular story.
Yeah. Well, if you look closely at the guns, they explain in the commentary that those guns actually contain sort of creatures in them.
I just called you, by the way.
Give me 15 minutes.
I'll be finished by then. Sorry, I'm just talking to Alicia.
When they pull the trigger, there's there's kind of something which the hammer actually hurts the creature, which then emits the beam.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Excellent. Thank you. Anyway, next, obviously, we see the mother of mine.
Not cool for the creature.
No.
Yeah.
Mother of mine. Brilliant. I have the facial acting of the actress who played Jenny and then Mother of Mine. Very, very good. Although Martha didn't spot it. Although she did initially. Not initially, but then, of course, when she starts out to be straight.
Oh.
You like gravy in your tea?
That scene where Martha's having tea with Mother of Mine. Did you notice this is the second time we've seen Martha's bloomers?
Oh, no, you stole my thunder. Yeah, Martha's displaying a lot of underwear in these scenes.
For sure.
Ooh. Yeah, there's some hung up on the wall. In the commentary, they say that they're probably hiding something 21st century behind.
Okay, whatever. So this is at this point that she realizes that that Jenny's been taken over, that she thinks it's time for the doctor to open up the watch, but unfortunately, it's not there. So she's now trying to explain to the doctor that he isn't the doctor, or he isn't John Smith, he is in fact the doctor. Yeah. She runs back to the TARDIS, the watch isn't there, old wonky face is looking particularly sinister, and it's time for the dance. So this is a really good scene, actually, this scene where, they sort of get held up. It's one of the best cliffhanger scenes in the modern age of Doctor Who. So they didn't stretch it out for too long.
I know, yeah.
It built up to it, and they didn't have a long exterminate, or like in the Aliens of London two-parter, where that they built up to it, and then it went on for too long with the electrification sort of thing.
Yeah.
This, it just went up there, the guns pointing at who you're going to choose, your wife, your friend or your lover, and I just loved that. I thought it was really, really good, and you couldn't really see a way out of it. Well,
did anyone notice what date this dance is occurring on?
No.
Is it November 11th?
November the 11th is exactly 5 years before the armistice.
Right. Yeah.
Oh,
exactly 5 years before the armistice.
Excellent. Well done. Well
but,
done,
but
Kirby.
In the novel, it was 1914.
Well done, Kirby. Huh? I'm impressed. But did you also notice that the guns themselves looked a little bit like prawns?
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
now I'm hungry.
Well, shrimps, as you would say in Australia.
We know what prawns are.
No, I call them prawns. Yes. Thank you very much.
They're called prawns.
Okay, prawns it is then.
It's only Paul Hogan who says, "Show another shrimp on the Barbie."
Yeah.
But in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, they...
Oh, he probably changed that just for the Americans.
That was crayfish. Sorry, I'm getting confused. But yeah,
for another crayfish and the Barbie.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, like I said, that's one of the best cliffhangers. In modern Doctor Who. If you can think of a better one, please let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
A lot. Like at the end of the Pandora opens is pretty damn good too.
So we have another 1.5 minutes of you know, repeat of what happened in the previous episode, which makes the second episode a little bit shorter, obviously. But
guess I better go back to the menu and start the second.
The resolution was satisfactory, wasn't it? I mean, what happened? Let's face it, Martha Tim saves the day by distracting with the watch, but Martha is the one that sort of takes hold of the situation, rather like, you know, Mary keeps saying, she's very resourceful.
And I like her comment, God, you're rubbish as a human.
Yes.
To John Smith.
Yeah.
He wasn't really rubbish, he was just going...
He was!
But she...
Yeah. Oh wait, no difference there.
She created a brilliant standoff with Wonky Face.
Just stop calling him Wonky Face.
It's
called Son of Mine.
I like it.
Extremely wonky. But yeah, that was an absolutely brilliant scene, and I don't know if RTD or Moffat could have actually made that scene, you know, so enjoyable and the resolution so satisfactorily.
I think Reese put it nicely, though, about Paul Cornell episodes, didn't you, Reese?
They're few and far between.
They're quite beautiful. They're few and far between, but they're quite beautiful.
We've only got three, haven't we? That's a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
So basically Martha saves the day, gets them all to leave and holds off the family of blood. And I'm trying to remember how she gets out of it. Because she really should get killed at this stage, because it's just...
No, she's talking about things. It's, what was it?
Can't remember.
He was just saying about killing... He says, I'll kill you if you kill me kind of thing.
But the thing is, Robert, she gets grabbed from behind by a scarecrow. Doesn't she?
She manages to get away.
But what I forgot to mention was the guns that they have, you know, the effect of shooting, the disintegration effect is really good, because they shot them and all the particles fell to the ground. I thought that was a pretty good effect as well. Didn't like the fact that they were getting killed, but just like the way they actually did it. So, yes, and now they're sort of, they end up going back to the school, and John Smith rounds up all the children to fight on his behalf to protect the school. Basically what happens, because he didn't have to run to the school, he could have run somewhere else and not put the children in danger, but he decides...
It's a beautiful scene with all the kids, you know, lined up and firing on the scarecrows and the school music playing. Oh, it's...
Yeah, and also the tears in the eyes of some of the kids.
Beautifully done.
And also alluding to the fact that the next year they'd be doing that for real.
But did you notice, even though John Smith picked up the gun, he never fired it?
I didn't notice that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never. I didn't notice.
So he's still got a bit of a doctor in there.
Maybe so. But of course, the head teacher.
What was that thing, though, that... He says, don't let me harm anyone, and that was sort of like part of an innate...
Has anybody noticed, though, that John Smith is wearing a tweed jacket and a bow tie?
Yes.
Yes. Ah.
Oh, no, I didn't. Yeah.
Bow ties are cool.
If you took the waistcoat off, he'd be very...
And he wore the hat later as well.
Well, have you seen the Doctor's new costume? It's got a waistcoat involved in that.
Well, it's not. But this is a tweed waistcoat that goes with the jacket. But I mean,
the bow tie is wrong.
I think he's got a long coat now near the 11th Doctor. But anyway, just something I was.
It can be any bow tie, though.
Of course,
because they're cool.
The daughter of mine gets into the school, and
she went in, when daughter of mine went in, or sister of mine. Sorry, that's what.
Oh, it's a sister of mine.
Yeah, when she goes in, she skips. She again has the little music from Remembrance.
I wondered whether you'd remember that, but that yes.
Remembrance of the Daleks is one of my all-time favorite stories.
Do you know why?
Yeah, I love it.
Do you know why, Kirby?
Why?
Because it's very good.
Yes.
Anyway, there's another great standoff between
You like good stuff.
Bane has off with the head teacher. He sort of kills one of his...
Headmaster.
Headmaster. Kills one of his little subordinates just to show what he can do, and the head teacher then... Sorry, headmaster then runs off with his tail between his legs. And doesn't he...
And for him to get shot by the little girl.
Mentioned, doesn't he say something along the lines of, let's give them John Smith, that'd be an easy way of getting out of it, but no. They decide to fight, yeah. Don't they? Of course...
That's the English way, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is where we get up to the scene where all the kids, you know, crying and stuff, because obviously they're afraid.
Now, when all of the scarecrows are gathering together, it took me a couple of watching that.
Yeah.
It's again, they're taking the same group of scarecrows and entering them digitally.
I think they look fantastic, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. It's just the whole feel and look of this story is brilliant. And it's a bit like a little Doctor Who movie in a way. Obviously, there's a bit Doctor Who, Doctor Light, because you don't see much of the Doctor himself in it.
Yeah.
But
these three episodes, Human Nature, Family of Blood, and Blink, feature the least amount of the Doctor we'd seen in a long time.
Yeah. but this on its own is probably one of the most rewatchable stories of any era. Is it?
Yes.
And
I think that's mainly because of the lack of story arcs. I mean, I love the scene where Martha explains to Nurse Redfern that she is a doctor, she does know medicine by going through the bones of the hand. I just love the way she played that.
I know the bones of the hand, and I'm not a doctor.
Yes, all right, fair enough. I know the bones of the foot because of David Beckham.
In what era?
Era. The 1900s.
It was a bit different back then. They had no internet, did they?
Oh, I see. Very good.
I learned it in biology class and pre-internet in high school. Come on.
So do you remember them then?
In high school, you learned all the bones of the hand?
Yeah.
Fascinating high school you went to, Kirby.
Now, this is an ordinary high school in Little Rock, Arkansas.
May I just say, right, you alluded to earlier on, obviously we'll be talking about Blink next week, remembering how Blink ends with a load of baddies surrounding the TARDIS. I won't go too much into that. But there's a scene in this story where the baddies surround the TARDIS.
Oh, yes.
And
all the scarecrows.
And father of mine is turning into the Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
He was pretty angry all the way throughout it.
So strange, this odd green light just showing or shining in his head. Yeah, go on.
But he speaks, opens his mouth and says words when they do that, whereas the other guys just stand there with the green light on their faces and they do voiceovers in the studio. I wonder why. Was it the first time they did that, I wonder?
I don't know.
And then they decided, that's a bit tedious, we'll make them do it in voiceover or whatever.
Anyway, this is, of course, the Doctor... Sorry, John Smith is in denial as to whether he's actually the Doctor or not, because he loves...
He does look like he's the Incredible Hulk.
Thank you.
I just saw it again.
I just said that. And basically, I think that Nurse Redfern's starting to realise that it is, in fact, how Martha has been explaining it. But John Smith basically loves being John Smith and loves being in love with... Nurse Redfern.
Such a great scene.
Latimer's starting to realise that he should really think about getting the watch back to John Smith, especially as the little girl has found him. So he fends her off with a little opening of the watch. And quite a lot of this Time Lord energy comes out and hits her, which I didn't know whether that would be a good thing, because it... And obviously that alerts all the other family to his whereabouts. Yes, it does distract them from fighting with the other children.
And don't we see that scene where he's with the arachnoid, the flames and all that?
Which is obviously quite a favourite scene because they do tend to flash back to that quite a lot in Tennant's era. But like I say, this is where we see the kids.
Anything with flames.
The children crying. I say the choreography of the scarecrows, the way they walk, was really, really good. I remember seeing that in the Confidential. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
They'd had a bit to drink as well.
Yeah. And yes,
they found that,
John Smith does have a gun.
Yeah.
We see bullets fly, but we don't see him firing any. But we see bravery. Brilliant acting by the extras in this. And I think at this stage he realises that it's a bit futile. They let the little girl through because she's a little girl.
Resistance is futile. Yeah.
Very similar. I mean, the harking back to Remembrance of the Daleks is quite clear with this character, the little girl. Although the Remembrance of the Daleks little girl didn't have a balloon, I don't seem to remember.
Did she?
I don't remember she had a balloon for the whole thing.
No, I don't think she did. You know, if they had the... If Paul Cornell had been in the commentary for this episode...
That would be right,
I'm sure that he would have made a... I'm certain that someone did that deliberately. The remembrance.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned just a few minutes ago, Adam, that John Smith doesn't want to become the Doctor and die... David Tennant actually worked in it. Well, probably didn't work it in deliberately himself. It was probably in the script, but it contains the seven stages of grieving or dying, which starts off with shock and denial, which is what he's saying. He doesn't want to die. He loves being John Smith and living in this world and loving who he loves. And then there's pain and guilt, anger and bargaining, depression, reflection and loneliness. Yes, I am reading this. The upward turn. Reconstruction and working through it, and acceptance and hope. And throughout the last few scenes of this story, with John Smith in it, you can see that he starts coming to terms with the fact that he has to do this, but he starts bargaining with the family of blood, saying, "You can have the Doctor. I don't want to die."
Yeah.
And various things like that. And I just picked up on that because I learned about that at drama school, and I thought maybe David Tennant had worked that in deliberately.
Now, isn't that interesting that I'd said about you learning stuff at drama school, and then you actually come up with something you learned at drama school?
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for that, Rhys.
Okay.
I forgot where I got up to now.
That was a nice observation, Rhys.
Yes.
Oh, for goodness sake, what did I get up to now?
I don't know.
No, it's very no.
I think they just went to the cottage.
Yeah, but I don't want to, you know, devalue that particular comment you made. It was really, really good, excellent stuff. They're in the cottage, and the TARDIS has somehow got out of the little. Don't know what was it, a barn or something it was in. They've managed to get it out from the barn. How do they do that?
Scarecrows must be strong.
Yeah,
scarecrows are strong.
Oh, are they?
Even though he rips the arm off one earlier.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love that scene.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
actually, at his shoulder too.
The interior of the farmhouse is a set, even though the exterior is at that Welsh farm museum.
They edit it very well, don't they?
Yes, it's at this point that they're trying to flush out the Doctor or the Time Lord thereafter by doing some sort of bombardment.
Ah, can I mention something?
Yes.
They also had the voice of the Watch saying, "You are not alone," as well.
They what? Say that again.
Did you remember that? You know when you hear the voice from the Watch? It does mention the phrase.
So that is, there is
it also
a...
mentions the phrase, but not alone.
So there is a story arc involved in that. That's disappointed me. Oh. Slightly disappointed with that. Never mind.
But that's not nothing.
Yeah, but
major,
it was very subtle because I didn't notice it.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Well,
it's definitely
in, like,
there.
Yeah.
So anyway, I remember. So, the Doctor is getting to the stage now with this bombardment that looks like they're basically, you know, they're going to die unless he's persuaded to. Of course, they haven't got the Watch, but he doesn't, even if they had the Watch, he doesn't want to, open it. Latimer turns up with the Watch, and even with that, he's very, very reluctant to actually open up the Watch.
Martha helps, you know, when she talks to him, she says, "He means everything to me." And he doesn't even look at me, but I don't care. I love him to bits. And then she turns and says, "And I hope you don't remember I said that."
And also the fact she says, "I love him to bits," you know, is something, something you would say about a friend. It doesn't. She didn't say, "Oh, I love him," or I'm madly.
She said it.
No, but she
meant it.
Yes, I know.
She meant it. Yeah.
Yeah, I know she did, but she said it in a way that it could also be construed as, "I love him to bits as a friend." So I quite like the fact that she said that line and not, "I love him" or "I'm in love with him." It was a great line to say.
There's a deleted scene, by the way, just before Latimer shows up at the cottage, where he meets with Hutchinson. The other student who he's eventually going to be in World War One with, and he explains his reasons to take the Watch back to the Doctor, and it was unnecessary, and that's why they cut it, but it is available on the DVD.
Cool, thank you. Of course, in the end, it seems although we don't know it at this stage, and it's the Nurse Redfern that actually persuades him to open up the watch, but not before they both sort of grab the watch together and she sees a flash forward of what could have been, which was rather lovely.
Like Latimer does.
Yeah,
and the one thing that really bugged me when I first saw this was that most of those scenes were in the preview the previous week. As if they were a major part of it.
They would have more impact, wouldn't they?
And you know what? One, it reminds me of one of my favourite Star Trek stories where Picard goes back and lives a whole life on a planet.
Oh.
And learns to play the recorder.
Yeah, and that's absolutely one of my favourite Star Trek stories.
It is.
But on that story, you actually do get to see him live most of that life that he talks about. This is just a few flashbacks. But that's what it did remind me of.
Can I ask something? Can I ask something about that?
Yes, you can.
That scene? You know, the old Doctor, I think that's a bit different from the old Doctor we see at the end.
Probably, because he's
this old makeup looks good.
Yes, John Smith one. That was a good makeup job.
But also, you've got to bear in mind that the Doctor in The Last of the Time Lords is considerably older than this version of him. And also, this is this is a human version of him as well,
not a Time Lord version.
Right.
It's the John Smith version.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, nevertheless, very good makeup. And of course, then we get the scene that I remember watching at the time when he wanders in, you know, and staggers around and spudusters. I had absolutely no idea that it was in fact the Doctor. I thought when I watched it he was just going to go in there and open the watch up in the spaceship and become the Doctor then. So it was quite a nice surprise. The fact that he was, even though he was falling over and knocking switches and stuff like that.
Step back a scene, back to the scene in the cottage. Where John Smith is stating some reasons for doing things, and he does shift into doctor speak for
two sentences. Yes, that's right. Brilliant.
But how he talks.
Yeah.
I mean, David Tennant, absolutely one of his best performances as the Doctor or John Smith in this particular thing.
He relished it, didn't he?
Oh, and this is one of those stories where the Doctor is extremely ruthless at the end.
But I haven't got to that bit yet. We'll discuss that in a minute.
In that scene in the cottage, Latimer's speech about the Doctor is excellent.
Yes.
He's like fire and ice.
You know what it reminded me of?
Me too.
It reminded me of the speech in Curse of Fatal Death, where... like Father Christmas.
The farting mountains.
Yeah. Anyway, of course, the doctor gets to say one of his catchphrases when he says to them, "Run!" They all sort of leg it from the ship.
And he goes into his shoo-shoo-shoo type of speech.
I do think though that in hindsight, it probably would have been better for the family of Blood to actually stay in the ship at this stage. Judging mind what actually happens
for
to
them,
or what the doctor actually does to them. But it was quite. It was done in a poetic way, but I just can't understand.
Stop flapping your ears.
Sorry about that.
Yeah,
you know, it basically murders them, doesn't he? In a way, you know, he sends one of them into a event horizon. Locked up in chains or unbreakable chains.
My kids couldn't look at mirrors for a month. My kids mirrors. Had trouble looking in mirrors for a while.
No, we could. That's a bit like the blink thing, though, isn't it?
I think murdering them might have been kinder than what he did.
He locks a little girl in the mirror, but how did he manage this? A genius. How does the doctor manage to get somebody...
Every mirror.
How does the little girl manage to get possessed, though?
Yeah, but how does he do this? You know, if you bear in mind, and later on, he's got a problem with the reflections magic. In the Curse of the Fatal... Sorry. First of the black box. you know, it
won't go that way.
But yeah, I mean, that one that I didn't really like the mirror bit. I mean, I can understand that, you know, it, making it a bit spooky for the kids. And
so that little girl was in every single one of those mirrors.
A little girl, a good little girl, had to do
so.
And wonky face.
And wonky face. Wonky face? This looks like a completely
wonky scarecrow.
Well, dead scarecrow bloke. I mean,
well,
cruel.
Does anybody not notice that the scarecrow is a bit heavier when they try to move it in the field? And then look under the sack.
Under the sack? What are you talking
under
about?
Under what sack?
Beg your pardon.
Are they males,
no,
male scarecrows?
He puts on his head.
Oh, sorry.
He puts the sack on his head, doesn't he?
Oh, right, and it was just it's a homage to Wurzel Gummidge himself. Because obviously John Pertwee played Wurzel Gummidge. Anyway, yeah, so...
Wurzel Gummidge. You need me thinking head on.
But yeah, I didn't really like that aspect of it. I think the Doctor would have found...
Yeah, a bit heartless.
Yeah, this Doctor would... I mean, all it... I just don't get that scene at all. That's my the only part of it I have any contention
with. Well, he gave
with.
Them... Hold on. He gave them what they wanted. It was immortality.
Yeah, but in a very cruel, evil... Oh. A way the Master would have been quite proud of, I'd say. I can understand him being cross with them. I can understand him being... But basically, he gave them a punishment. He gave them a punishment that he'd never given even, you know, more evil... baddies in the past, but yeah, so that's
Daleks
all I'm
gonna, get that do that
no so I'm gonna say that's all I'm gonna say on the matter. So yeah, then we get a lovely scene between the Doctor and he says come with me. He invites her to come with him.
So in the same
you to
series
know, I was hugely
had...
jealous for Martha during that,
yeah,
because he's inviting Joan to come with him and he's kind of hinting that it could grow into something.
Yeah.
And all I could think of was, what about Martha?
But she completely turns the tables on it when she says about, would anybody have died if he hadn't decided to go there on a whim?
Which again, also, she calls John Smith braver than him because he ran away and became human, whereas he was willing to die.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. That's right.
Yep.
But
now, this is the second story in Series 3 where we've had someone decide not to go with the Doctor.
Yep.
Because Runaway Bride is considered to be Series 3.
Oh, right, okay.
That's right.
Yep, you're right, because it comes on the Series 3 box set. But the Doctor's alright, because he gets a hug off Martha on a very rainy-looking day. And then Latimer comes up, and the Doctor lets him keep the watch. And
it's absolutely
it was so
soapy.
Rainy, they decided to make it part of the episode.
Yeah. And, of course, that leads up to a beautiful scene at the Cenotaph, where we see the old Latimer... And that chap hasn't got any lines at all. But you know, you can totally obviously after we have the flash forward to him dodging the bomb in the war, which is not really needed, but nice. But I just love that Cenotaph scene because you can even though he doesn't look anything like him, you can believe that's the old Latimer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he looks over and sees a beautiful looking Freeman regiment on that scene. She looks up; she's stunning in the outfit she had in that particular scene.
And
she does. No, I'm just not in a sexual way. She just looked absolutely beautiful in that scene.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's the same...
in that scene?
No, specifically... she just, oh, shut up, you. Yeah, that's
you
the same.
Hello.
Yeah, you said that's the same. I just wanted to learn the end of the sentence.
If you were to turn the camera around and look the other way...
That would be the...
You would
11th
see
hour.
The 11th hour.
Yeah, I thought that. Yeah. You could see it, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Very, very similar.
So
you can see what?
No, you could see that was the same area. If it was a pond, wasn't it? And then obviously after that we get the prequel to Blink, which is our episode for next week. Never mind, we have to put up with Blink next week, and me hopefully not getting cramp. Severe lack of sympathy from certain members of my family. At least the dog stayed in it. Yeah, go on then. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I know we keep going back to that scene in the cottage, but when the Doctor comes through and he starts saying why Latimer can see into the future, Martha's hope and just happiness in the fact that the Doctor was slipping through was very subtle yet very well done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very awkward, isn't it? Because you try and look at certain Doctor Who stories with a very critical eye and try and pick up on things. I mean, I'll try and pick up on the funny things, but it's very... You have to be very, very picky with this one to find much wrong with it.
Mm. It's like The Girl Who Waited. It's like everyone picked up their picked up their game and just polished everything off.
Well, can I say something about the girl who waited? Sorry to interrupt you, but Alistair Pearson, friend of the show, refused to watch series 6 because he just didn't think it was worth watching. I know he's a Doctor Who fan, as everybody knows, massive Doctor Who fan. But he just happened to flick over to BBC 3 that was showing Girl Who Waited. Absolutely loved it. So hopefully that has fetched back another Doctor Who fan.
Yes.
But anyway, yes, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. That just reminded me of something I wanted to speak about. So.
Okay. Just that I was saying everyone seemed to lift their game, and not that, you know, other episodes are poor, but they seem to just work harder to make this one. I'm not even going to go there. It's not that other episodes were poor, but they seem to just make these two episodes, just polish them off and make them perfect.
Oh yeah, and it just seemed like the production values were all there. The great story and yeah, like you
fantastic
say, Reese,
casting,
acting was wonderful, perfect.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I think there's probably more to come in the next thing. I will say, you know, obviously we're doing one of the, we're going to finish this before the new series starts up. I nearly forgot to mention that once we get, before we get to Utopia, we'll be watching, and hopefully you can get to watch it, The Infinite Quest, because I've never actually watched The Infinite Quest as a complete thing.
Yeah, I haven't either. I own it, but I've never watched it.
No. Yeah, same here.
So that will be our task for one episode, will be, before we get to Utopia, so we'll be watch Blink. Is it Utopia after Blink?
Yes.
Yeah, so it'll be Blink, then Infinite Quest, and then Utopia.
Okay.
Last year. So that's the plan.
All right.
And that
Mary, have you got the...
No, I don't.
I don't know where to find Infinite Quest.
YouTube?
You have...
Yeah, it's on YouTube, I believe, or on the BBC website.
You can rent it from Netflix if you've got... But it's not streaming. It's only DVD.
Yeah, I only have the streaming.
Oh.
Look for it
on YouTube.
Yeah, look for it.
Yeah, it's probably on YouTube.
Yeah. Look for it, indeed.
Don't find it for Mary, then.
So for me, I've definitely only really seen that as once, and I don't really think I'll pay much attention to it, because it's very fast-moving, so... Oh, hang on. Just so one of the dogs...
They came out as small episodes, weren't they?
Yeah, they were done in, like, five-minute sort of things. Yeah. I think it works out about 25 minutes.
So that's why, thing. Yeah.
And for the Doctor Who... What was it called again? The Strictly Doctor Who, was it? The children's programme? Something like that.
Don't know.
I have no idea. Mm.
Anyway, yeah, so.
Yeah, the only reason I got it was because, for completeness.
Yeah.
you and Adam, I'm telling you, two completists.
Well, yes, very much so. Of course, we'll be
Locked
doing...
all the DVDs.
I'm missing a lot of stuff.
We will be doing you how you are, because bearing in mind I've actually got everything, so that makes me a complete completist.
yeah. I've got everything too, Adam. So,
No, you haven't.
What haven't I got?
Clean that up, Robin.
You haven't got a signed copy of The Terror of the Autons, signed by the artist of the cover,
Alistair Pearson. I've got a signed
John
copy
Pertwee.
Of Terror of the Autons. I've got it signed by Katie Manning.
Ooh. Mine signed by John Pertwee. And it says,
"Children."
Adam.
Yes.
I've got a signed letter from Tom Baker.
Settle down.
Had a postcard from Janet Fielding.
Yeah, real.
The real Janet Fielding.
And I've got a postcard from Patrick Crowden.
I have a collection of short stories that is signed by Robert A. Heinlein.
I've got Fraser Hines's phone number.
Oh,
you guys don't know who Robert Heinlein is.
No.
I know he's a science fiction author.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, I can beat you all.
Children.
I do not own a single DVD or videotape or anything. I'm a completist.
Yeah, but that's because you're sort of technology advanced. yes, because you use more advanced technology. That's the word I was trying to get at, to actually watch your Doctor Who these days.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Except to watch Doctor Who that way on Netflix, you can't get things like commentary and stuff.
You're right.
Yeah, that's the same. If you buy episodes from iTunes, you don't get commentary or anything like that, unfortunately. But there you go. I'm just perusing the BBC Doctor Who website, which says the next episode is The Doctor, The Widow and The Wardrobe. on BBC Three on Friday, 8 a.m. The looks of things.
Hey.
Yeah, so there you go.
To me, that's the most disappointing of all the Christmas specials.
Yeah, but
I
not,
agree with you.
Really, not much time to go.
See the Runaway Bride, did you?
To the new Who. So anyway, so that rather concludes our look into. I think we can say I don't really have to ask you all what you thought of it because clearly we all thought it was brilliant.
How about brilliant?
Mm.
Yes, marvelous.
And the novel's good too.
Fantastic.
Have you read the novel? I didn't know they brought out about a novel of it.
No.
Oh, you mean the original book? Yes, it was based on the No, wasn't a Target book, was it?
And can I mention
Virgin book, wasn't it?
Can I mention? Yeah, it was just called Human Nature.
Yeah.
Oh. Virgin book. Can I mention
something? Apparently they used to have stamps saying, or badges you could get saying, I'm a Target Doctor Who reader. They never had one saying, I'm a Virgin Doctor Who reader.
Yeah, I've got that.
I don't know why.
Oh, this is interesting. I'm looking at the cast list for the Infinite Quest.
Yes.
And Anthony Head is the chief baddie.
It doesn't exactly disguise his voice. I just wondered, is Alicia there?
Not here.
Can I mention something about?
Yes, go on quickly. Mention it before Alicia takes over the podcast.
I was just going to say it's a prelude to tell us that Time Lords can change to human form. So that later, when we see the Master.
Yeah, but of course, this, I think in the book,
what's
didn't
his
it?
Name?
But wasn't it in the book that it was a Fobwatch then?
No, it wasn't a watch, it was, I think, a clay thing or something.
Oh, was it?
Like a vase or something, I don't know.
I see. Let's,
clay vase or something like that.
Magic's just come up to give me a bit of sympathy, which was considerably lacking earlier on in the
farting.
Evening. No, he's just come up to sniff. He's sniffing my poor leg, which is.
You didn't mention the green crab before.
Which cramped. Trouble is, right, my leg cramped up right down near the knee, so I was trying to straighten out to get rid of the cramp, and because it was straight, it wasn't getting rid of. You know what I mean? When you straighten leg out, if you can straighten out, the cramp will go, but because my leg was actually straight, as far as it was straightened, the cramp would not go. Excruciatingly painful.
Sounded like
lack of any sympathy from certain members of my family.
Well, we heard some glass break. Yeah. Tell us what that was.
Well, the thing is, right, as I'm sitting here, I have my laptop, which is recording you lot. I have my Mac, which is where you lot are speaking to me from. I have my old broken PC, which is recording another version of my audio, which is not going to be any good because it's about a minute behind on its timeline. And I have my camcorder recording my backup audio, which is the audio I'm now going to have to use for the episode. But on my right-hand side, I have the keyboard to the Mac. Well, on that table, a glass containing my... Well, I didn't have any drink left in it at that stage. It was just an empty glass.
Remains.
And when my leg cramped up, what's your immediate reaction? You all sat down, you get cramp. Would you just carry on sitting down, or you jump up very quickly to try and straighten your leg out? When I jumped up, my chair went backwards, the table went sideways, the glass flew off sideways, hit the wall, and smashed.
And that's all that was the worry, that was broken, never mind about...
Well, the thing is, though, the glass itself had Top Dad on it or something. It was a Father's Day present that I got from the girls. Not something I really particularly wanted to break. But it's just on this occasion I decided to use that glass and not the one I'm using now. So it wasn't deliberate. But
now, not to diminish the pain you must have gone through, but we all feared the worst, that you might have been shocked plugging in a cable or something like that.
Yeah,
electric shock. We all thought, oh my God, he's been thrown across the room.
Right, or
but
broken
it wasn't
bones.
As bad as that.
And I can't wait to hear however you edit that.
What will probably happen is I'll just
leave a bit in.
I'll just remove my audio track completely from it and just edit down whatever you lot were going on about, which obviously I had no idea because I didn't hear any. I heard you talking.
Most of it was, oh dear, oh dear.
As much pain as you sounded like you were in, we were all asking each other, well, should we hang up and put an end to this? We didn't know
we were trying to figure
out
how to call emergency services or call
Oh, look, Alicia's there. Alicia.
It sounds like Alicia.
Yeah.
About time. Why have you been taking about 5 minutes before you actually said something?
I have to go in 10 minutes. Levi's going to call me.
Well, how long have you been on?
By Strauss.
A pair of blue jeans is going to call her. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
No, no.
386s, aren't they?
No, she means Levi Roots, the famous creator of Levi Roots Reggae Reggae Sauce.
They don't know what that is.
Didn't think they would somehow. And now here's Alicia with the top 30 Doctor Who podcasts for this week. Over to you, Alicia.
30 down 6, Travelling the Vulcans. 29 up 1, Ian Todd's Universal Podcast. 28 Re-entry, Waffle On Podcast. 27 down 9, Blue Box Podcast. 26 down 5, Tim's Take On. 25 Re-entry, The Time Vault. 24 down 7, Staggering Stories. 23, New Podcast Who. 22 down 7, The Big Finish Podcast. 21 Re-entry, Earth Station Who. 20 Re-entry, Doctor Who Revisited. 19 down 5, Playing Doctor. 18 Re-entry, Who's the Man Podcast. 17 Re-entry, The Crinoid Podcast. 16 Re-entry, The New Who Podcast. 15 down 5, Doctor Who, Who's He. 14 Re-entry, The Naked Scarf. 13 Re-entry, Mostly Harmless Cutaway. That's a weird name. 12 down 4, Pharaoh's Project. 11 down 4, Playing Mad Quack Doctor Who Podcast. That's rubbish. We were 7, like last week. What's happened then? Is it because I'm not on there?
You're carrying on reading the chat.
No, it is, isn't it? 10 down 4, The Omega Podcast. 9 down 4, The Memory Cheats. 8, Re-entry, Adventures of Space, Time and Space Music. 7, New Lunar Hour. 6,
can you say that instead of mumbling it, please?
7, New 11th Hour. 6, Re-entry, Impossible Podcast. 5, New Doctor Who Podcast Feed. 4, Non-Mover, The DWO Who Cast. 3, Non-Mover, The Tin Dog Podcast. 2, Non-Mover, Ready Free Scaro.
Ready Free?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Is that a new one?
1, Non-Mover, The Doctor Who Podcast.
So they replaced Radio Free Scaro with Ready Free Scaro. Thank you, Alicia.
That's right, mate.
Yes, Alicia. Now, you, of course, were a brilliant podcasting person and watched Human Nature and Family of Blood, didn't you?
Yep.
That's a lie.
You don't believe me, I did.
That's a lie, isn't it?
Which episode today?
I'm not lying, I did actually watch it and you don't believe me.
Well, no, I don't Which believe you because you had still hadn't watched it by 8 o'clock this evening, and it's in about an hour and a half if you watch it together. So an hour and a half ago from now takes us back to 8:30 when you were in the bath.
I've watched both of them.
Right, okay then, tell me all about it then, Alicia. This is Alicia Pearson's angle on...
off TVO.
Famous Flanders and Swan Song in the bath.
I sung it in primary school.
Sorry, Alicia, you contributed such wonderful stuff the last time we did a Sunday. I was looking forward to hearing more from you today.
Sorry, I can't be bothered.
The Queen.
So anyway, thanks for running to my aid when I was in complete and utter agony about an hour and a half ago. That was much appreciated.
No, you broke my heart. I don't care, Dad. That's why I'm not. I haven't been saying much today because Dad's broke
Alicia,
my heart.
Alicia, he didn't do it deliberately.
He did do it.
Magic.
Gone.
Oh, he did.
Get in here. There goes another one.
Get in.
Careful, Adam. Yes.
The dogs are being extremely naughty. And I've just knocked my microphone off the...
Dad.
Yes?
Dad.
What?
Mum just ran up the stairs and throwed stuff at me.
Why?
Oh, dear.
Because apparently I'm talking now.
Well, you don't need to. I have got a... Anyway, I think we might be coming to the end of it now.
Microphone. Yes. Before she heads your way, Adam.
Yeah, I better hold on to this glass.
Dad. Dad.
Yeah.
Dad.
Lock everything down. Quick.
Which way was she going, Alicia?
Dad.
What?
Dad. She keeps backing you with the bending wall.
It's a Zygon.
Right, should we leave it?
I'm not talking that loud.
Okay, well, I think you'd better stop talking full stop. As will I.
Dad.
Okay.
Yes.
Dad. So will I.
Dad.
What?
Dad. Can you come and shut my door?
No.
Why?
Because I've got stuff I need to do.
They're what, about 5 meters apart?
It sounds like a conversation between ice warriors, but I've got to go to bed. I mean, I've got to stop recording. So,
why are we whispering?
Dad. For safety.
Dad.
Shush. What?
Dad.
Yes.
Dad.
What? What?
Can I be on next week?
Hopefully.
Can I be on next week's podcast?
If you're here, yes.
I won't be.
I will be here because I'm not on the podcast. I'm not on the podcast this week because of you. You're the one who smashed the cup.
Now.
It's your own fault. No, I'm still not happy with him.
Next week's a Monday morning.
Yeah, next week is Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost some holidays.
Oh, is it a holiday?
Yeah. 6 weeks.
Anyway.
6 weeks.
Dad, I'm scared.
Well, let's finish it then, please. Thank you for listening.
I'm scared.
Thank you for listening. Bye. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Goodbye.
Bye.
Help
me. Help me.
Is an ABPV services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. I did it!
Right, I want this being stopped now. Right now. If you carry on with it, you will be going with consequences. So if you want to know the consequences after keeping me up and down the bloody stairs now, you're going to know it. Get it off now. right now, tonight.